When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, along with Armand Brody. And of course, this is Super Bowl week, which means that this is a Super Bowl preview edition of the podcast. If you have not already, please subscribe at the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And with that out of the way, let's just get right to it. We'll start with the biggest topic entering this Super Bowl. Typically, one might think that would be the ratings, but this year it's Tom Brady. And the Fox analyst making his debut on the Super Bowl in his rookie season. I think we had talked about this before, not on the podcast, but I'd be curious, who was the previous analyst to call the Super Bowl in his rookie year? Armand, you'll probably know that. But Brady, certainly he's been raw. He's been, a work in progress, and now 120 million people are going to be watching him work on Sunday. Armand, your thoughts?
Good to be with you, John. I think Phil Simms called the Super Bowl in his first year as lead analyst with NBC, but Paul McGuire was with him as a second analyst in the booth. I guess you could count Jill Theismann from the mid-80s when he worked the Super Bowl with Frank Gifford and... I forget who the other analyst was, but I know there was another one back in the mid '80s. They had a pretty bad Super Bowl that year.
Was that one of the was that the OJ year?
I think it was the OJ year.
Wow. Yeah. Well, then he couldn't have been the worst analyst in the booth in that scenario.
To your question about Tom Brady as a whole, this is a unique situation, and I am really interested in how he performs for obvious reasons. I don't buy the theory that you do the game the same way. I don't. I think there is a degree to which Brady needs to sort of ease into the broadcast a bit. Now, that is affected by the flow of the game. If there are a couple of big plays early, I think it affects how Brady approaches the game. But if there are a couple of three and outs, not a lot of activity early in the game, I do think it provides Brady with an opportunity to sort of ease into the broadcast. But it's an interesting situation. All eyes will be on him. You know, it's funny. Brady upstaged Mahomes in their Super Bowl head-to-head back in early 2021. And in some ways, he's taken the spotlight from Mahomes and the Chiefs here. But I think the best you can hope for is about a B broadcast. Tom Brady is who he is at this point in his broadcasting career. He's not going to wow you with charisma like Romo. He's not going to sort of geek out and yet explain things thoroughly and cogently the way Greg Olsen does. And he doesn't quite have the broadcasting chops like Chris Collinsworth. And he also doesn't have the sort of just say whatever you feel with raw emotion and frankness like Troy Aikman. He's still sort of figuring out who he is as a broadcaster. And I think you're going to hear more of that on Sunday. You're going to hear a broadcaster who's pretty much been, at best, a B-minus broadcaster throughout the course of the year.
When have you ever had an analyst with this lack of experience doing a Super Bowl? I mean, obviously, we talked about Simms, but I mean, a solo Super Bowl. Every step of the way when you have a rookie analyst doing one of these events for the first time, they have someone there to hold their hand. Isaiah Thomas, when NBC debuted him, on the NBA, they brought in Doug Collins midway through the season to hold his hand a little bit. Same thing a few years later when Mark Jackson, we talked about this last week, was the solo analyst for the NBA. They brought in Jeff Van Gundy. In both cases, Doug Collins and Jeff Van Gundy had done it before. Brady, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be his show. He's going to be the sole analyst. He's going to be the star of the show. Everyone's going to want to know what he's going to do. And I think he has shown nerves so far this season. And, you know, you think about Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, you know, ice in his veins. Who has ever had more heroics at this level? And who ever will? Even Mahomes, ultimately, is likely to fall short of the at least the number of Super Bowls Brady played in. But it's a different scenario when you're broadcasting. And I do think that he might well be maybe not overcome by nerves, but I think we've seen already that it shakes him up a little bit to be on live TV. And this is the highest level that there is.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. I still have a lot of questions, even though we pretty much know what the answers are because fame wins in this country. But I don't agree. I've never agreed since all of this came down. I never agreed with the thought behind giving Brady this spot as a solo analyst. There was just nothing there that would lead you to believe that Tom Brady was going to jump headfirst into broadcasting post his playing career. There were no signs there of that. Not a whole lot of charisma shown during his career with the Patriots. You got some of that with the Buccaneers, but his fame was more sizzle than there was steak when it came to Tom Brady. It was always that way. And so to have him in the booth here as a solo analyst is not, in my opinion, the best move from a broadcast sense, but we know that Fox has other ideas in mind when it comes to Tom Brady. You just want to be in business with the man. And I understand that, but the broadcast should not have to suffer because of it. I think at best, you get a broadcaster who maybe finds his rhythm in the second half. You hope that the Brady of the playing field sort of shows up here. What do I mean by that? Just give me the big moment. In a Super Bowl, you don't always remember the small thing. You don't always remember, you know, the first down in the second quarter that, you know, was a big momentum shift. You don't always remember that. But you do remember the big penalty in the fourth. You do remember the turnover midway through the fourth quarter. Does Brady nail those moments? I have found that Brady has been at his best when he is breaking down a play. Now, some of the language has been a bit confusing. He does get a little jargony sometimes and a little too inside football, but he's been at his best when he's been able to break down plays. I also hope that for Brady's sake, just give us some emotion. Give us some, it's a Super Bowl. You know, he's big on the LFG stuff and let's go. And the podcast was named that. And he was famous for saying that throughout his career and pumping the fist and showing all this emotion. Just give us some of that during the game. And I do think that's important as well. Put yourself in the mindset. Take yourself back. Take the country back to when you were a player. What were you thinking as a Super Bowl quarterback? What were you thinking? Take the players through this. Take the viewing audience through this. Let us see. Let us hear what it's like. So just give me some emotion. Let us feel what you're feeling. I think that's important for Tom Brady as well. Take us through that throughout the course of the broadcast.
Yeah, I mean, you make an excellent point. I mean, the reality is that, as we said, I mean, it's kind of the nerves aspect. Brady isn't really being himself. There is a lot that he's holding back. And the worst part about that is when you are so conscious as he is, he's very self-conscious. I mean, that I'm not trying to do any armchair psychology here. I think that's fairly obvious to people who see him on the air. He's so self-conscious that when he does try to be authentic, it comes off as fake. And so, you know, that's a difficult thing. How do you make him comfortable in his own skin in the booth where he doesn't really want to be and where he is only there for the money, right? And he has no passion for it. The other aspect is people do this, they have a passion for it. I think Greg Olson has a passion for this. I think, you know, I always go back to Charles Davis having Bob Rathman as his mentor. Does Tom Brady know anybody like Bob Rathman? Like people, I mean, he knows, you know, Jim Gray, right? But like professionals who are well known in the field, maybe a little bit niche, they might be a local broadcaster somewhere, but they're well respected professionals in the field. Does Brady have those folks that he's relying on? And that's kind of a question I've asked before. I don't want to be repetitive. I feel like it's only happening because Fox is, you know, Fox backed up the Brinks truck. And that's no way to do a broadcast. We know that Fox is putting on a Super Bowl where they are not putting the best possible broadcast team on the air. And for a network that, as you have noted before, a network that started out knowing they had to get Summerall and Madden for their credibility, this is the first time in all these years that Fox is putting on a Super Bowl and they're not putting their best possible booth together for the game.
I agree with that. Most famous, sure, but not the best. And so there's only so much Kevin Burkhardt can do. Burkhardt's done a great job, I feel, throughout the course of the year in leading Tom. I tell people all the time, television broadcasting is about building on a thought. You say one thing, and then I say something else that expounds on the thought that you just gave. And Burkhardt has really done a great job with that. He does well even as a host for their Major League Baseball coverage. But it's different when you're out there on an island, as Tom Brady is, and you've got to look in that camera, and the words have got to come, and you don't have a lot of time to really think about what you're saying. You've got to react quickly, but there has to be enough in you. There's got to be enough of an expansive vocabulary there that you can pull out the words while also following along with what Richie Zients and Rich Russo, producer and director of Fox, are showing you on your monitors in front of you, and also doing it with emotion. You know, John, some of what Tom does, it's just not having enough of a sense of what makes a great communicator. Some of it is, instead of telling me, man, what a great play, something as simple as saying, what a play. Something like that, where there's staccato and you break up your sentence structure. It can do something as a broadcaster. It's what made Dick Vitale so great. It's what made John Madden so great. It's not always about what you say. It's about how you say it. And so my hope is that there are some things that happen during the broadcast that bring Tom Brady to a place where he forgets about trying to be a broadcaster. And you just give me some of that, oh, man. And he does it sometimes. It's annoying to some, but I would rather you do that and it be authentic than not do it. In the middle of a play, he'll go, whoa, oh, wow, that's okay. Because it at least gives us a glimpse into who you really are and how you might really respond. And I hope Brady shows us some of that on Sunday. I'm sure between these two great teams, there will be enough big plays there, but we really see it an opportunity for Tom to let some of that personality, which feels so controlled and so inauthentic, to really let some of that through.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent points as always. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what the performance will be. You said B plus, is that what you said, the best case?
At best, B minus, I said, B minus.
B minus. A C is a passing grade.
And C's get degrees.
Yeah, C's get degrees, they do. It's $38 million a year, I've said that a million times. They have the money. Really, more than anything, it's not the money that they're spending. It's the fact that they're not putting on the best possible broadcast. They could do an A plus broadcast with Greg Olson. They could do a B-ish broadcast, honest to God, with Darryl Johnston. I mean, they've got a lot of people on their depth chart who would do a better job than Brady, just because Brady's a novice who's not really that interested. But, hey, you know, Brady's got the name, and the name is the game in this business. It's a little bit, to kind of make a reference to something that's going on right now, you think about, I would say Greg Olson's Luka Doncic, right? You know, the homegrown talent. You've had your eye on this person, and they actually turned into what you were hoping that they would be. And then you just trade him. And, you know, I mean, hey, Anthony Davis is better at what he does than Tom Brady is at what he does. I don't want to make that comparison. But, I mean, it's like you're trading away someone that you developed, someone who actually lived up to the potential, and you're kind of chasing this other thing when you already have what you need.
I agree with you. And when the news came down about Tom doing this, I was stunned, number one. But I said to myself, because I've been following Greg Olsen. I was telling friends before he even started on the lead team with Burkhart. I was telling folks when he was doing the XFL with Burkhart during the spring, I was like, keep an eye on Greg Olsen. He's heavy into the jargon, but he understands how to do this and he's got a passion for it. And when I saw him do that game with Charles Davis during the season as a player, still active, I said, this guy is interested in this. I will say this for Tom. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. Don't try and be something you're not. Don't try and be a genius. Don't try and be brilliant for this broadcast. If this is an average broadcast in the booth, it's fine. Tom Brady's first Super Bowl in New Orleans, he had 16 completions for 145 yards, one touchdown. They won the game. He won MVP. If he pulls off that kind of performance on Super Bowl Sunday, the broadcast will not necessarily be remembered for any great thing he said, but people will not be annoyed. And that's about all you can ask for.
Well, hey, nothing better than just getting by. Adequate is good. C's get degrees. Not to be repetitive, but they do. And it is interesting. I like that you brought up his first Super Bowl, because a lot of those games with Brady in those days, that first run, you know, they were getting bailed out at the end by Adam Vinatieri. You know, it's not like Brady's out there dominating the game. And I guess it's got to be the same way. Hey, he's got teammates. He's got Burkhart, who has proven himself. Certainly, Rinaldi and Aaron Andrews, they must have done it before. Rinaldi has been with Fox now for longer than a lot of us realize. You have the studio folks. You have Strahan, who, I mean, come on. Strahan is by far the most talented media professional that Fox employs. So there's a lot of people there to support Brady. It's not just going to be him. And if he can be a game manager, right? He doesn't have to be Mahomes, right? He can be that Ravens guy who's ruining UAB football. What's his name? Trent Dilfer? He can be Trent Dilfer. If he's Trent Dilfer, then that's really all you can ask for. And we have now spent about 20 minutes of live recording time on Brady. So we do have to switch gears and talk about the television ratings for this game.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers. And they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. Hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride, prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Obviously, this is going to be one of the most watched Super Bowls of all time. Anyone who reads Sports Media Watch knows that I am someone who likes to put the numbers in context, and I don't just go with the "wow, most watched thing ever" press release. It's one, out of home viewing is a huge factor in why the viewership has been setting records. Out-of-home viewing was not tracked in Nielsen estimates until 2020. It was tracked separately, but not officially, from about 2017 to 19, and not tracked at all prior to 2017. All of that means there's no way last year's Super Bowl was the most watched ever. There's just no way. I can tell you right now, Patriots-Falcons in 2017 is, unless someone can correct me, the most watched Super Bowl of all time, as recorded by Nielsen. If you include the out-of-home viewing, that was measured separately. I would go further and say Patriots-Seahawks in 2015 is almost certainly the most watched Super Bowl ever. It's just that out-of-home viewing was not tracked at all. So out-of-home viewing skews all the historical comparisons. Nielsen this week announced that they have expanded out-of-home viewing to now cover the entire country. It previously covered about two-thirds. So that means that this year's Super Bowl will have an even greater out-of-home viewing bump than we saw last year. So you will more than likely see another, you know, record high touted for this game. That doesn't mean it's actually the most watched Super Bowl ever. It may very well be down from last year, but officially the most watched ever because of that extra out-of-home. Really, either way, I still don't think it's going to be higher than the actual audience that tuned in say, 2015 or 2017, or heck, you could go even further back. So you could even go back to the 1980s. The highest rated Super Bowl was in 1982, a 49.1 rating. Now, that probably wouldn't translate into the number of viewers that we see today because there were fewer viewers back then, right? I mean, the population was smaller, but I have no confidence that the record highs that everyone will be touting, that everyone has been touting for the past year, are actual record highs. Most people aren't going to care. But if you are interested in, you know, not just going with the press release, well, keep in mind all of the various ways in which Nielsen's methodology continues to change, and that next year will be another record high, because starting next year, they're going to be doing their new big data measure that includes all sorts of other first-party measurement. I mean, that's going to be three straight record highs that can be primarily attributed to Nielsen's methodological changes. Kind of a big deal to me. I know most people will not even notice, and that's, well, kind of what the industry is banking on, just in general.
You sound like a man who's had a lot of time to process this and to, I hear the frustrations that you have had with, because I hear what you're trying to do, right? You're trying to objectively share data and come as close as possible to making apples to apples comparisons. But doggone it, if they keep changing the rules and the networks keep touting their numbers that are skewed because of all of these additional factors, it makes it more difficult for you objectively trying to provide proper context to the world, which is largely growing less and less concerned with proper context, especially in these situations. It actually makes your job more difficult. I was going to suggest that sort of I would not have expected the ratings or the viewership, I should say, to have an increase from this year compared to last year. But if you keep tinkering with the rules and tinkering with how the data is measured, then as you said, we would expect Fox to have some great press release about how this is the most watched event, television event in American history. So that's probably what we should be expecting, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. Unless it's a blowout, I think that out of home change from last year will be enough to make a difference, because my inclination is I do think that all things being equal, this Super Bowl will probably be down. Last year, you did have the Taylor Swift effect, which I've said before, I'm a little bit still to this day skeptical of the extent of it, but I think it's inarguable that it was a factor last year. One, you had a second English language broadcast with Nickelodeon. That's not a small thing. You had a Univision Spanish language broadcast. That is the number one Spanish language channel. And CBS is just generally a bigger channel than Fox and beats Fox on NFL games the past 2 years as well. And obviously this postseason has fared better than Fox as well. So a lot of reasons to believe that this year's game is at a disadvantage. Also, just it's going to be hard to match last year's game in terms of the excitement level. It went not just to overtime, but to the final seconds of overtime. So there's a lot of reasons why I think all things being equal, this game will be down, but all things are not equal. And in fact, all things are rarely equal in the measurement game nowadays. So I think that, you know, again, if you see a record high touted in a Fox press release on Monday morning, be you know, keep in mind all the caveats that are accompanying the ratings today, and keep them in mind, especially next year, because that big data number, I mean, who knows? The big data number is out there already. Maybe Fox will share it, you know, instead of the panel only. But the ratings game is increasingly, you know, one that requires a lot of context and a lot of knowledge. Otherwise, if you go in not really knowing and you're just kind of saying, well, this number is bigger than the other number, well, what does the bigger number have that the smaller number didn't? That's something you could try to be aware of.
John, do you buy into the idea of Chiefs fatigue?
Yeah, I think you always get sick and tired of the dominant team. So, I mean, the exception is the Michael Jordan Bulls, but that's also because those Bulls typically in their three-peat years, the third year was the toughest, right? They had by far the toughest task facing Charles and the Suns in 93. And even before that, the Knicks in the conference finals when they were down 0-2. And then 98, the rematch with Utah. You go to the Yankees, their three-peat. Again, the toughest, this is a bit more of a, you know, caveat, because the Yankees had such easy runs in those years. They won all but one World Series game in their three-peat. I mean, that was ridiculous. But the one that they lost was in the third year against the Mets in Game 3. So typically, the third one is really tough because you've won 2 years in a row. You're exhausted. You've played so many games. I think that if you look at the Shaq and Kobe Lakers, there was fatigue for that last finals that they played because it was so boring against, you know, New Jersey. But against Sacramento, the ratings were great in the conference finals. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there isn't a fatigue. Maybe it's just the quality of the test, you know?
Yeah, I think what, I don't know if hurts is the right verb, but
well, for the Super Bowl, hurts is a great verb.
That's true. But I think what raises maybe some question marks is the fact that this is literally the exact same matchup as 2 years ago, with so many of the exact same players. Mahomes, Kelce, Hurts. Your biggest names there. There are some other pieces that are new, like Saquon Barkley, and some other pieces that have sort of risen, you know, Cooper DeJean and Quinion Johnson, some of these newer names that the sort of average person doesn't know, but your superstars are still there. Your marquee names are there. Reed is still there. Sirianni is still there. The coaches. And so I wonder if that plays a role in this. Even if you've got Kansas City going for the three-peat, but it's Kansas City, Washington, or Kansas City, Detroit, that newness, does it maybe give a little bit of an oomph in terms of interest and viewership? I wonder about that, but given the fact that this is the exact same matchup with so many of the key players from 2 years ago still apart, I do wonder if that will have a negative effect on the viewership, all things being equal.
Well, I definitely think there's not a lot of, you know, juice for this matchup, right? And I felt the same way last year. So the game will obviously determine all of this. If it's a great game, that won't matter. You would prefer to have Detroit there, or, you know, as you said, maybe Washington. You know, some kind of underdog story, something fresh and new. You know, it'd be interesting if it was, you know, Bills Eagles would be interesting. Ravens Eagles would be interesting. But, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, you think about Cavs Warriors. The problem wasn't necessarily that they kept meeting in the finals every year. It was that those finals became very uncompetitive when Kevin Durant went to Golden State 4-1 and 4-0. You think about Clemson and Alabama. You know, that was when people got tired of very quickly. But also, they became blowouts, right? I mean, Clemson routed Alabama, I think, the last time that they played when they had Trevor Lawrence. So if the games are good, people will overlook, you know, having the same matchup over and over. This kind of feels a little bit at this point like where the Patriots got to when they won against the Rams the last time, not the first time, where by then it's like, enough already. You know, we get it. And that game that they played, that Super Bowl in 19, probably the worst one of the modern era, right? Yeah. That was terrible.
Yeah.
So if the Chiefs play a Super Bowl like that, then the fatigue will be real. But if they play a Super Bowl like the one that they played the last few years, I think people will still be excited by it.
Yeah, and you wrote a great piece for the site about Chiefs and how they keep averting disaster, and just keep skirting by the skin of their teeth, which makes for compelling television and which keeps people coming even though they may be tired of them, of the Chiefs winning. The Patriots went through that as well, where their Super Bowls back-to-back, they were always nail-biters. The two with the Giants were. The Eagles game was. Of course, the Rams one that you mentioned was dreadful. The first, that Philadelphia matchup, the first one where McNabb was throwing up in Jacksonville, it was close. Wasn't terribly exciting, but it was still a close game. The Carolina one was a thriller as well. So the Patriots had a lot of thrilling Super Bowls, and despite the fact that they were winning, at least for the most part, the games were very competitive, and the Chiefs have that as well. That's really been one of the most intriguing parts about their run, is that they just get by. And that's, and when a team is like that, it's not that they feel dominant. There's a difference between not dominance, it's assurance. It's the assurance that no matter what happens, somehow or another, Mahomes, even though he was hurt in the Super Bowl 2 years ago against Philadelphia, magically, he comes out in the second half and they're down 10 points, if I'm not mistaken, if I remember that correctly, and they get back in it and they end up winning the Super Bowl 38-35. So the Chiefs' ability to win in close matchups, I do think, makes for what should be another compelling Super Bowl, and one that's watched by, of course, a ton of people.
Yeah. And of course, you know, we talk about the Super Bowl, we talk about the ratings. There's so much more to it than the game itself, the teams involved. We do have to mention the halftime act. It's Kendrick Lamar this year after Usher last year. We've talked about this off the air. I don't know how well known Kendrick Lamar is among the broader American populace. Like, you know, remember, it's a Super Bowl. It's 120 million people. Like, it's people who are not necessarily in the cultural zeitgeist, right? Do they know who Kendrick Lamar is? Because I feel like they knew Usher, even though Usher is not necessarily the most famous. There might not be as big a pop for the halftime as you typically see. I mean, we're certainly not talking about Beyonce. I'm not saying he's not good. I'm just saying he's not as, in my view, my expectation is he's not as mainstream.
I agree with you, actually. I don't, the buzz doesn't feel the same. And I think the reality is there aren't that many megastars who bring enough eyeballs to a global audience that you would want to put in the Super Bowl halftime show spot. I think, I can't think, and maybe I'm just out of touch, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, there, I don't know if there are that many names of just ultra mega superstars that you would want in that slot that, that you know will bring the eyeballs, other than the handful of obvious names. And so because of that, I don't think there's that same sizzle, that same buzz around this year's halftime show as there was with a Rihanna, as there was with a Beyonce. Heck, to a degree, as there even was with Usher, who, granted, is not Michael Jackson, but he's been around 30 years. And so at least there's more of a familiarity there with somebody like an Usher than there might be with a Kendrick.
You know, Snoop Dogg, obviously, you know, Snoop is way overexposed and at this point entirely corporate, but it's also the Super Bowl halftime show. So nothing more corporate than that. I mean, this is the year of Snoop. Maybe he should have gotten it. Taylor Swift would obviously be the dream pick, especially if the Chiefs are also there. So she's working and he's working, would be the best scenario there. But outside of, you know, that scenario, you make a great point. Who are the most iconic Super Bowl performers of all time? Michael Jackson, Prince, Whitney Houston, and they are all deceased. And that, you're not replacing those three anytime soon. And we'll wrap up here. Obviously, we need a prediction for the Super Bowl audience. I've already given my prediction on Douglas Pucci's website, Programming Insider. I'm sometimes when I give my prediction to Doug, who asks for these for every event, every major event, sometimes when I do my own prediction, I deviate a bit from it. So when I gave my prediction to Douglas the other day, it was, I think, maybe shy of last year. I'm trying to remember the exact number that I predicted was 122.78 is what I said. But I think that was, you know, that was even after Nielsen made its announcement about out of home. So I guess I'm kind of stuck with that prediction. I mean, I do think it could get to 130. It would not shock me if it did. But I'm going to stick with that 122.78. I think my points are generally sound about the limitations in terms of network distribution this year. It might not be that good of a game as well. You cannot bet on overtime. So I'll stick with that. But if it goes as high as like 130, I'm not going to be stunned.
I say 123. That's my number. 123.
So just basically a push with last year.
Yeah, I think it's a push. I know that's a weak. I see you look disappointed.
That's all right.
But I think the game will be, I actually think it'll be a good game. I think the teams are really evenly matched, and I don't think it'll be the classic of last year. And there's only been one overtime game in Super Bowl history, which was last year.
Oh, don't forget Patriots Falcons.
Oh, I'm sorry, two overtime. Let me correct that for yeah. So there've only been a handful of overtime games in Super Bowl history. So it's not something you can expect every year. There've been 59. There've been 58 of these rascals. Sunday makes 59. But hard to see getting that kind of game Sunday. But I think it'll be a good game, a close game. And I think because of that, you'll get pretty much close to the same number that we got last year.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a safe bet. And it'll be very interesting to see what that number is. But again, please do keep it with a grain of salt, as you really should with basically any figure, from Nielsen ratings to political polling that you see. These are not, you know, there's no chips in the TV that gives you an exact figure. We have kind of reached the point where ratings are synonymous with Nielsen. Nielsen is a private company that does estimates of the viewership. That's not saying 123 million people watched. That's saying Nielsen estimated based on methodologies that are in flux and have changed numerous times in a decade. Keep that in mind. All right. Well, I think we've covered pretty much all of the Super Bowl talk. We haven't spoken about The Floor, the Fox game show they're airing after the Super Bowl. Yes, indeed. Fox is airing August-level programming as a Super Bowl lead-out. The type of thing that they air, summer replacement programming, strike fill fodder, that's what's leading out of the Super Bowl on Fox this year. And, you know, I mean, I joke about The Floor, obviously, but it does say something about where Fox is its broadcast network and where the broadcast networks are overall. This may very well be the penultimate Super Bowl on Fox. They have one more in 4 years' time. That's so long from now that there'll be a new president by then. And I don't know that they're going to get another one. The NFL opts out of its contract. I think everyone expects him to in 2029. This is definitely an interestingly timed Super Bowl, kind of maybe, you know, the last period of certainly the Fox network. The Fox network's going to be very different the next time that they get the Super Bowl. And by the way, didn't mention this, they're starting a new streaming service later this year with sports and news. So they were the holdout for many years. They're diving on in. We'll see if that is something where they're able to, you know, kind of pick off some of these folks who are cutting the cord. But I think this is what possibly the second to last Super Bowl that they'll ever carry. And of course, for Brady, he gets a Super Bowl in year one, doesn't get another one till year five, which is not great for his development. But hey, it is what it is. All right, Armand, thank you as always. And thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more stuff down the line.
With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Whether you're looking to buy your dream home or rent a sweet apartment, give Redfin your gotta-have-it wish list of property features, and you'll receive real-time notifications tailored just for you. Ready to see it up close and personal? Scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Don't wait to find your perfect match. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get select Post cereal or Kroger peanut butter for $1.49 each with a digital coupon. And we've lowered prices. Save 15% or more on hundreds of items like Thomas mini bagels, Campbell's SpaghettiOs, and more. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.